This is the ERP Advisor.
Today's episode, Introduction to ERP Systems.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us for today's webinar, Introduction to ERP Systems. As you can see, we are going to be doing this from home, so it should be a lot of fun. But our presentation today will cover the following learning objectives. What is an ERP system? How ERP solves business problems? Why companies use ERP systems? What makes an ERP system? What ERP systems can and cannot do? What are the types of ERP systems in the market? How to buy an ERP system? And then we will review who sells ERP systems, discuss common pricing models for ERP systems, list the types of costs for an ERP system, describe the professional services costs you will incur in implementing an ERP system, and provide best practices for negotiating ERP system contracts and services statements of work. So lots of great stuff to cover today. Today's presentation is valid for one CPE credit. In order to receive the CPE credit, each attendee is required to attend the full 50-minute presentation, as well as engage and answer all of the poll questions asked throughout the presentation. If you are needing CPE credit for today's presentation, please leave your name in the chat of this Zoom or send an email to chrissy@chrissykroger@erpadvisorsgroup.com. That will pop up in the chat for everyone. And that will be for record, and you will be issued a CPE credit. At the end of today's presentation, there will be a short question and answer period. If you have questions for our presenter, please add it to the chat section of this Zoom. All questions can be sent during the chat, but we will not respond to any questions until the very end of the presentation. Sean Windle is our presenter for today. Sean is the founder and managing principal of ERP Advisors Group based in Denver, Colorado. Sean has worked in the enterprise software industry for over 20 years. He started his career at Accenture and Arthur Andersen Business Consulting and moved into the software industry with Oracle as a technology product manager. There are only a few people in the world with the practical software experience that Sean has gained with helping hundreds of clients across many industries with selecting and implementing a wide variety of enterprise solutions. His podcast, The ERP Advisor, has dozens of episodes with thousands of downloads and is featured on prominent podcast platforms such as Apple and Spotify. Sean, if you are ready, I will pass it on over to you.
Yeah, thanks, Rebecca, and very well done to everybody for modifying our plans and handling the snow. I wish for those of us that are on the call, or for those of you that are on the call that aren't here in Colorado, I could turn my camera around and you could see the beautiful snow. But I think we got about a foot so far where we live. So super exciting and glad that we could help warm your hearts on this beautiful day with ERP systems as a topic. So as Rebecca said, ERP Advisors Group, you know, we don't make a dime from the vendors, implementation partners. I think I say this like 10 times a day. But it really, really, really is important. We are super focused on just our clients' needs who end up paying us if we do a good job. But we're super focused around what exactly are we trying to solve for with enterprise software, what options are in the market, and which ones really are the best fit. And then we even stick around to help with go lives. As we say here, we'll do literally about anything to make sure that our clients are a success. I've been told by HR I can't make analogies to the mafiosa or to other groups like that. No, I'm just kidding. But seriously, because we do a lot of deals each year, we're able to work with the software vendors and implementation partners in a way to just ensure that our individual clients' needs are met, which is phenomenal. So I couldn't do it without great software solutions in the market and even some of the partners that are out there. So let's jump into this and let's talk about what is enterprise resource planning, or ERP. Now, the interesting thing here, now Gartner Group, which as most of you know, is an IT industry analyst group, been around for a long time. They sort of coined the term after sort of modeling it on materials requirements planning, or MRP. So enterprise resource planning, the ability to deliver an integrated suite of business applications and ERP tools share common process and data model covering broad and deep operational and end processes, such as those in finance, HR, distribution, manufacturing, service, and the supply chain. So that's it's a pretty good definition to work with in terms of what it is. And I will tell you, and I'm going to give you a lot of key tips during this presentation. And as you all have questions, please, please, please put them into the chat. Rebecca and Nick will manage those and we'll make sure to get to them later, or I'll leave a few minutes at the end too for some impromptu questions. But listen, if you don't know what something is, you're going to fail with it. I don't care if it's a marriage or building a house or a car or implementing ERP. And unfortunately, in my industry, there's a lot of failures and I hate that. We have built this deck with the intention of going through very, very basic data that when you combine it all really does make up the complexity and sophistication of what ERP is. So it's a good definition. That's what I'm trying to get to. It's the basics. The key thing here is that you'll notice that ERP sort of spans different functional areas or departments of an organization. And I constantly say organization, meaning for-profit, nonprofit, government, quasi-government. We've worked with everybody. So kind of across all of those organization types, we're looking at software that kind of runs end to end. But we go another step further with our definition, and we call it connected business apps used to automate business processes and manage resource data across the entire enterprise. That actually sounds like the exact same thing. And if you're, you know, a consultant, maybe it doesn't, you know, there's consulting speak, blah, blah, blah. But in actuality, the reality is that very, very often an ERP, right, is made up of multiple applications. And the key function that we're trying to drive with a lot of our clients is that they're connected business applications. So you may buy some solutions from 5 or 6, or sometimes some of our clients have 50 or 60 different applications or looking to connect. But the goal ultimately is to take a business process, call it order to cash or procure to pay, and build as much automation. Boy, does that term mean more now than when we even built this deck? We've used this presentation for several years. When you see automate, you can't not think artificial intelligence. But this is sort of an undercut in order to get even to AI, which I'll go into a little bit later. But we really are looking to manage, monitor, control, and improve the resources throughout the entire business or enterprise here. And when we say manage the resources, we're really talking about people. We're talking about inventory, projects, everything that sort of makes up an organization. And I think Accenture coined the term. I'm just associating it with them. Maybe they didn't. And that's usually, again, what a good consultant does. They take somebody else's stuff and make it their own. I don't know. But this phrase of a digital double, if anybody has heard that, I think that's more around like avatars and games and things like that. But that's kind of what we're talking about here, right? You have your organization, the real organization with all the things or the resources in it. And wouldn't it be great if we had a digital double of that so that we could track and monitor and see things in one place, whereas over here in the real world, it's very, very difficult to do that, especially as an organization grows, it gets bigger, more diverse. So when we talk about ERP, I love to throw this phrase out, not to confuse anybody, but it really is a conceptual framework for how to automate processes across the enterprise. When I say conceptual framework, think puzzle box. That's it. A puzzle box is a conceptual framework in a way, because it sort of says, okay, all the pieces in the puzzle box, they all have to sort of fit together in this way. Well, that's kind of what ERP is. Here's all these apps that are going on. And by applying it as a conceptual framework, you can see sort of how the applications fit together. So hopefully nobody has left the call thus far. Thankfully, it's a CP event and you have to stay till the end to get your credit. And I haven't confused anybody too much that they blew. But at the end of the day, just remember, we're not talking about an app anymore. It's multiple apps that come in. And we're looking at connectivity across all those applications and a framework, right, for managing and really representing an organization's resources, but in sort of a systematic or software environment. So Let's go to our first question. ERP covers end-to-end processes in what departments? We could have even said ERP can cover end-to-end processes in what departments? We have human resources, finance, distribution, supply chain, and E, all of the above. So please, if you do need your CPE, please do vote here, and we'll give you a good 60 seconds here. I know we've got quite a few people on the call. So if you're not listening, listen. Now's the time to answer the question. And it's interesting for me, just some side notes while we wait. We don't have any music to play. I think I learn more about what ERP is literally every day. There are components of things that come up that I'm like, oh, wow, I never really thought about that before. Not that often, frankly, but there are things. Even this morning, I was working through a client presentation, and the human side of ERP is something that often gets left aside. And ultimately, that's what can really drive the success, as we'll talk about a little bit later. But for now, we're just talking about basics. Okay, good. So the correct answer to that question is all of the above. And this is important because sometimes software vendors, that's why I'm hesitating a little bit, but we're amongst friends here, and hopefully we have some folks that we work with on the call here too, I hope, that are listening. Sometimes it's easy to sell ERP as it can do anything. It slices, it dices, it does most everything, right? That's not really true. And there are differences amongst all the ERP vendors. But again, at this level, just understand it really can cover all of these processes, or it can cover one of them. So good. Now, the next question we have to ask ourselves, that's funny. I think that sounds like a line from one of my wife's favorite shows on something about aliens. What is that? We have to ask ourselves, is it really ancient alien astronaut theorists agreed that it is aliens anyway? But we have to ask ourselves, why are there ERPs in the first place? Like, what problem do they solve, and how do they do that? And it's pretty straightforward when you really boil down what an ERP system is trying to do. We've come up with four real problems. And by the way, if you don't have one of these problems, you may not want to implement an ERP. You may have a different problem that's solved by something different. So again, we'll talk more about that. The first one here is lack of data visibility. So as we say here, organization of processes under one system, making it easier to track. And that is really true. Simple example of not seeing, accounting doesn't see contracts that sales has. Sales makes agreements, and then accounting billing has to bill. And what if we can't see what those agreements were that sales said, right? Or executives, senior executives are trying to look into the organization and understand why costs are going high in a region or in a product, or with a customer, our margins are really high. How do we know that, right? We have a lack of data visibility as an organization gets bigger and bigger and bigger. They can't just pick up the phone and call somebody. Wouldn't it be great if they could actually see the information for themselves? So definitely ERP does solve that problem. You do see, as organizations get bigger, there can be reduced productivity. We were talking to a global firm the other day, and they had purchased quite a few different disparate offices, and they started talking about the amount of administration that's required to support their core processes. And they realized, wow, there's probably some automation we could do here, of course, right? The answer is yes. And in actuality, by increasing productivity, we believe that an organization can then better serve its clients through accessibility and maybe even providing more value-added services. We rarely will take on a project because ERP equals synergy costs or like reducing headcount. If you have that much headcount redundancy already, there's probably some other problems, frankly. But where we see the real benefits of increasing productivity are really around, again, giving people the 80% of the time that it takes to develop and compile the data, and then they only have 20% to analyze and make decisions. We want to see that sort of flipped around. Now, does every ERP do that? Is that the same promise as AI? And is that what I think every technology vendor has sold for the last probably thousands of years? Yes. But there is true benefit in automating your procure-to-pay cycle, where if you're sending around by paper, pieces of paper to get stamped approvals or sign, okay, I approve them, get it to the next person. So a lot of workflow, document kind of flow absolutely can get solved with an ERP. A couple other things on this slide here, errors and inconsistency across departments. We can automate tracking key information to reduce errors. So, having information and the right information can make other departments' jobs a lot easier. Lack of communication across departments improves and eases communication unequivocally. Those are actual things that an ERP can solve. How it's solved and the way that it's solved depends, of course, upon the implementation. But those are real reasons why or problems that an ERP can actually solve for sure. And the right ERP can connect many aspects of an organization and can ensure efficiency across the board. There's a little salesy pitch in there, I guess. But so now this is another slide. If anybody wants the deck, just put your email in the chat here too. We sort of use this internally that when we're helping a client decide if they should switch software or not, we really do look for at least one really of these bullets to ensure that they should do it. Sometimes there's more, but if there isn't any of these points, it might not be worth switching. And like our marketing team's little icon down there, I'm wearing a nice warm sweater. I don't normally wear my blue cape, but I guess we got a picture there for it. I should get one. That would be pretty cool, actually. don't change software unless you absolutely have to. It's so hard. There's so much work that goes into it. We were talking to another company just today, and they have, I think, 10 or 12 legal entities that they want to merge all of that into one application. And their private equity company bought them 2 years ago. The standard hold time for that private equity company is 5 years. And I said, oh, so are you going to have time to get your ROI on all this work you're talking about? What do you mean? Right? Because, these bigger system implementations can take years. And by the time you're done and spent all that money, you're not going to make any money on that for a while. The ROI isn't going to come until you have apps in place. So don't switch if you don't have to. But very often when we see these drivers, it's like, oh, great, we got to do it, right? So growth is a very, very big one. And growth's amazing. Expansion, it's what it's all about, right? That's what I hope every person on this call is driving towards every day in their job, right? There are more business transactions to track. We're offering new products and services. We're selling to new markets. We're bringing on new business lines. We have M&A activity. Like, there's just so much stuff that can change within an organization that as generated by growth, that then getting a new software application in place to help us manage that makes a ton of sense, tons and tons of sense. We have talked to some organizations that have said, okay, we're ready to go. And we jump in and they've got maybe stagnant growth. Maybe they're not necessarily looking for kind of that next step. And we'll say, don't change. So, but one thing that's major that can drive our recommendations is the next point there, which says legacy technology. So a company may be running on no longer supported solutions. They might be dependent upon legacy support resources. And sometimes just the tech itself just doesn't do what it should anymore. It just craps out. There's no other way to say it. So that's a very reactive reason, frankly, to drive into new software. But sometimes you just got to do it. There's no other way to say it. And I mean, we can talk for hours about the security risk of using an outdated software solution. Come back in October when we meet with our friends from KnowBe4, who they deal with that all the time. We can only handle it, around Halloween. I'm just kidding. We unfortunately handle it throughout the year too. But the point is that when a software solution is maybe not quite sunsetted, right? That means that's a pretty way, going off into the sunset. Isn't that beautiful? Except we run our entire business on that solution that we're not going to get supported anymore. I don't think I'd call that a sunset. I think I'd call that hell. Maybe it's pretty because there's lots of lights. I don't know. Anyway, I shouldn't get into all that. But it's true that sometimes software vendors sunset solutions, meaning they're not going to support them. Now, maybe the software isn't quite not supported, but it goes on a reduced support plan, right? Where maybe there's just some regulatory upgrades that happen there. But, we work with a lot of organizations that are coming off software that's just not supported at all. And the danger in that is that, I can think of like 20 different examples. Probably the best one I can say is, so what happens if the software goes down? Who fixes it? There's nobody who can fix it because it's not supported. I mean, that's obvious. But also, I am going to say this, and I don't mean to offend anybody, but you need to look at this. If this is you, you don't need to raise your hand here, but you really need to look at this. Oftentimes, unsupported software is an indicator of bigger problems at the organization. So we all know as CPAs, the fiduciary duty that we have to an organization. I mean, many of you are signing attesting to the financial controls within your systems. And when you have old software, unsupported software, there's usually other things going on that nobody wants to confront in the accounting space, in the financial reporting space. So I really want you to be aware of that. If you're new to an organization, you see it, we'll talk about new leadership. That's usually what happens. But even if you've been around for a bit and you know you're running some old software, unsupported software, upgrade it before you go. Just do the right thing. And you'll feel better as a professional. I mean, as a human, frankly. But if you leave an organization that has old software, unsupported software, and that happened on your watch, you don't have to do that. There's lots of ways to get help, et cetera, et cetera. I'll end with that on that legacy technology piece. Two other major reasons, regulatory changes come up. There are some new accounting laws that are coming up. Usually you can get a little bolt on or something to handle the revenue recognition, lease accounting, different kinds of kind of more focused accounting changes. But there may be more material like international reporting standards and things like that that may change a desire or need to change. And then the fourth one is new leadership. So if the legacy people didn't update the system and new leadership comes in and says, hey, it's time for a new system. Great. So you sometimes see that. Sometimes you see the new leadership team comes in and says, okay, we're doing things this way today. We have a vision for that way in the future. The way to get there is new software. And sometimes there's a mandate of a specific technology platform or solution. We see this sometimes with private equity firms where they have certain apps that they want their organizations to run on. And so they sort of mandate a change. So as I said, before I got all, accusatory there, I apologize again, but don't change the software unless you absolutely have to. But if you absolutely have to, you really have the duty to do it. Good. Enough on that. Enough harping from Super Sean there. Okay, so then why do companies implement ERPs? Not just from the drivers, what problems are we trying to solve, but why do they actually go and do it, right? And I'll tell you, the biggest reason is because it provides the opportunity for the current staff to develop the best solution, the optimal solution for the future state of the business, the organization, while providing connectivity across departments. It's so funny how we know more today than yesterday, right? And you always want to, when you hire a consultant, you always want to hire them after their next client, because they learn so much from that client that then they're going to be able to bring those lessons to you. But it's no different in any of our situations that we're in, where for CFOs, controllers, senior accounting people, that we learn so much more every day. So when we're given the opportunity to do an implementation, we get the luxury of saying, what do we need today and what do we need into the future, versus the last system that solves problems from the past. So we're always looking at solving the problems that are in the future when we implement ERPs. And that's a great reason to do it, a phenomenal reason to implement a software. And again, very often that connectivity too just makes a huge difference. And of course, you can automate processes, have access to more data, again, support new products or services. There's regulatory reasons too, as we talked about. But the fundamental driver is your ability to implement new software that supports you going into the future. And that future, by the way, before we go to our next question, that future, it's shortening. When I first started doing this, you know, the goal was like, maybe this is a generational app that we're implementing. then it was like, whoa, in 10 years, you're going to probably change so much that what we're selecting for you is not going to fit. But that's okay, because it's a stepping stone to that growth. I'll tell you now, a lot of clients that come off of 20, 25 year, 30 year old legacy software, you know, our horizon that we're shooting for is 10 years, but their businesses, the organizations, the nonprofits are changing so much that in our minds, when we're selecting software, we're not just selecting the feature functions that they need into the future. We're selecting a tech platform that can support the wonky things that we can't even imagine are going to happen. So, but it's a beautiful reason to implement, which is to create your future. Good. Let's go to the next question. So, true or false? One reason companies implement ERPs is that their current software is inhibiting their growth. So, true or false? Here comes that question. Please vote. I would say, when I think about Erica on our team, who takes a lot of calls, if anybody has any questions about ERP, call Erica. She has the 1-800 free ERP hotline, we call it. She's like Lucy, Peanuts, right? Is that what that's called? I think that's what that's called, from Charlie Brown. And she sets up her booth and she sits there like this and she says, okay, tell me your ERP problem. Seriously. And in 5-10 minutes, sometimes she can give some great advice. If not even taking longer, but she always does a great job of helping individuals with what their specific circumstances. But I would say, if we asked her how many companies call because of this issue, it's quite a bit. Right, we're actually getting a lot of legacy technology calls too, but it's a good reason. Good. All right, we close that up. Let's see what the answer is. The answer is true. It's a great reason to switch softwares. Frankly, it's probably my favorite, because usually when there's a legacy problem or a regulatory problem, there's a lot more heat involved on, now, why didn't we do this sooner and all that other stuff. But there you go. All right, so let's continue dispelling the misconceptions of ERP. So what can an ERP do and what can't it do? An ERP can streamline and synchronize business processes. And that synchronized word sounds a little cheesy, but it kind of is true, right? We can have order to cash, procure to pay, record to report, design to build, lead to quote, employee lifecycle. Did I say design to build? You can have project lifecycle and a partridge and a pear tree working together synchronously, right? It's actually true. It definitely can solve that problem. But it doesn't do everything for you, right? It's not like it's going to take away people's jobs. I'm just saying it right there. Hopefully, if we did this right, it makes your jobs a lot easier. Sometimes when we implement an ERP and we go live, it might not feel that way. Ooh, we just had 3 go lives recently. But, you know, over time, it gets a lot more stable for sure. So it also can cut down on errors. So if we're making calculations, we're making business decisions based off of, you know, wrong data, and now we have the right data, you're going to do a lot better with being able to do making decisions. Can also bring together data. Now, I don't think we talk about it in this deck. We have another presentation on financial reporting solutions and tools. ERP doesn't solve the deep analytics and reporting problems, to be totally honest with you. But it does give you the ability to have data, at least in a centralized place, where you can do some of that reporting. So we can bring together things like sales and costs to calculate operating margins by region, customer, product, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We can meet many different business process automation needs. And we can provide greater visibility across the entire business with an ERP. Blah, blah, blah. Good. Now, more importantly, when you hear these things, you run. Oh, the ERP can do anything. Yeah, no. All the ERP is the same as a CRM, customer relationship management. Yeah, CRM is built around objects representing customers, leads, opportunities, quotes, et cetera. ERP is transaction processing, beginning to end, data state changes, but through a transaction, whereas CRM handles more of a business object and its state changes as it evolves, if that means anything. That's all I'm going to say there. An ERP will not improve your processes on its own. I will say, if you implement out of the box, ooh, man, does that phrase have a lot of charge on it. Some of those processes are going to be better than what you do today, but you still need to test them. You still need to make sure they work for you. An ERP is too expensive for small companies. And that's not necessarily true, especially now. We're going to talk about the different tiers of ERP here in a little bit. But not everybody has to implement the big ones. And hopefully, we have people that dial in from all over the world and have all kinds of different implementation challenges. But I will tell you that, some of those big ones are a sure way to an early grave. Some of these ERPs are so complex, and if you don't know what you're doing, can be extremely difficult. So for smaller organizations, there are different tiers of ERPs that can be implemented. To this point, one size does not fit all, unequivocally. One application, there are different sizes of solutions that fit and make sense. And sometimes, you know, ERPs don't meet deep industry specific functionality. So a lot of the horizontal ERPs we'll talk about in a little bit, they sort of work cross industry. So when you're in a vertical or a micro vertical, which everybody's part of some micro vertical, chances are the ERP won't provide some of the functionality that maybe a vertical or industry specific solution does. So look out for that. That's really important. We probably could make a bigger point on that here, that when you think about the more general ERPs where they're written for lots of different industries, now they may have partners have written very specific solutions, but don't just assume that because they support engineering to order manufacturing that they're going to support your deep job cost requirements or services, same thing that, you know, when you really get down, you really do need to understand the details still. So there's a little bit of can and cannots. So let's do talk about the types of ERP systems in the market. This is sort of our nomenclature. I don't think I've ever seen it anyplace else, and maybe we're just making it up, but it actually makes a ton of sense. We'll start on the bottom here. Small companies, enterprises, again, even nonprofits are using what we call tier four, usually accounting packages, right? This is where you see QuickBooks, Xero, FreshBooks, Sage 50, which is the former Peachtree. And that really, like, we use QuickBooks Online, right? It works perfect for our business. We use a very expensive, it's kind of a best of breed, if you will, for professional service automation solution to manage our time on our projects and stuff. But we have an accounting package, right? Many of you may run QuickBooks or certainly have worked with it over the years. Basically, it handles accounting, right? And it's maintaining the books for a single company. You may be able to maintain the books for multiple companies. And now we have had some companies we've worked with that are in the hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue that are still running QuickBooks. So, but they're really just doing accounting. And then they have a boatload of other spreadsheets on the side. I should put Excel as America's most favorite accounting system on here, but we'll leave them off for a minute. Tier three, it's a little bit bigger. SAP Business One was just talking to an SAP Business One partner today. He would probably say, no, we can go bigger. And SAP Business One can, but Sage 100. So some of the older Microsoft solutions sort of kind of fit in there where it's accounting plus maybe one other function within the business. Very effectively priced software and solutions. Some good partners out there too. I'm going to go to tier one next, and then you'll see where tier two fits in. Tier one of the ERPs that you've definitely heard of before, the big guys and gals, very complex operations, kinds of businesses and organizations they implement for, lots of transaction processing too. So IFS, the bigger Microsoft solution, Oracle, SAP sort of fit in there. And then sandwiched in between one and three is the tier twos, which are like some of these that we mentioned here, Dell Tech specific to architecture engineering. And there's other micro vertical solutions that would fit in there too. But usually the tier twos go pretty deep. They are looking for pretty deep functionality in a specific area, as well as they're built or modified or customized to meet client-specific processes. They're capable of that. So you see a little more complexity there. So I would say in the last, I don't even want to say it, since I've been a professional, that's all I'm going to say, big shift to tier two, humongous shift. And that occurred because the cost of technology platforms that you don't even think about has gone so far down that now the market can sustain intact, that should be on there. NetSuite, Acumatica, the Microsoft Business Central. There can be tons and tons of these tier twos now because the cost of providing those solutions has gone down significantly. And the desire for industries to not implement the big ones, maybe they've been burned a couple thousand times, has also led to that. So that tier two is sort of an interesting category for sure of software solutions. Good. That's it on that one. So we have our next question here. What is something that ERP systems cannot do? So synchronize business processes, offer data connectivity, everything for your company, and cut down on errors. Not eliminate, but cut down on errors. Go ahead and answer that question when you give you a couple seconds to do that. I never really thought about that before, how the market can really sustain. It's almost like too many options, frankly. I can go into a whole thing about the upcoming consolidation that's going to be occurring as the hyperscalers have more money than most countries and are looking for fun games to play and for driving people onto their platform. I think they're going to buy a bunch of ERP apps. That's into the future. That's like the investment banker discussion that we do. But it is important that when you're looking at any of those tiers of solutions that you are looking at their long-term viability for sure. But back to the question. We'll give you a couple more seconds here. Good. So the answer to this question is, see, everything for your company. Pretty obvious, but again, I would be very, very weary of a person, whatever they're selling, when they say, oh yeah, I can do everything for your company. I don't think anybody says that anymore, but sure used to. So good. I know, keep sending your questions. I see them popping in here, and we'll definitely leave some time to cover them at the end. So thank you for popping them in. All right, so we kind of went through what the heck an ERP is, why companies do it, why do they implement, what are the different types of ERP? So then who sells these things? It's kind of an interesting question to ask because you're like, the vendor? If it was only that simple. There's multiple types of partnerships, value-added resellers, independent solutions providers. There's all kinds of different companies out there that sell this. And every vendor, every software vendor is different. So no, just know that, right? Because the vendors can either be the company that creates the software, writes it, the publisher, or whatever, or a representative of that company, right? Such as a partner. Usually, hopefully, oh my gosh, I don't know if that's actually true. I can't think of anybody we buy software from that's not authorized or certified or protected with or affiliated with the software vendor. You definitely want to make sure whoever you're buying from is affiliated with the software vendor if it's not the software vendor. I only say that because I can see how today some people will go online, they'll do some research, and they'll pick an app based off of some report that they download. You'll notice in our reports, by the way, we never say, this is the best app. Because that's just stupid. That's just sensationalization trying to get your attention. So be wary. If we knew exactly your requirements, we absolutely would tell you which one. Again, call Erica. She'll probably tell you. But it's easy to go online and say, oh, okay, for my industry, this is what this website that, yeah, it's not funny that the software vendors are advertising on it. Interesting. Okay, but anyway, the website, right, says this is the best software vendor. Great. And then there's a number and you call the number and you say, I want to buy the software. Like, okay, great. We'll sell it to you. And, you know, here's the implementation. Great. You sign on the contracts and then you send them money and then all of a sudden they go out of business. But you didn't buy the software from Microsoft. So even though they say they're a Microsoft partner, did you verify it? I mean, I know that sounds silly when I say it like that, but you really do need to be aware of it. So that's why we're having this quick discussion. So as we say here, we have sort of software vendors, right? And those are the big ones that everybody knows about, but they may have authorized companies called independent software vendors, ISVs, that write solutions specifically for different applications. So you definitely see this in the Microsoft world. I mean, you see it in all of the software vendors, frankly, where they don't write the big behemoth ERP. They just write a teeny tiny little piece of it. So if you're going to buy a teeny tiny little app from a teeny tiny little company, should you be concerned about the viability of that solution? I mean, yeah, there you go. Another tip, right? And there are other companies out there that sell the software, but they don't develop the software, right? And those can be called value-added resellers or VARs. You hear that, or solutions providers, alliance partners. Maybe they just implement the software and they sell it. Sometimes companies just implement and they don't even sell it, and they work for the software vendor themselves. So there's lots of different options out there. And I think why we bring up this slide is because sometimes we will get calls from companies that say, you know, it's not going very well at all. Okay, well, who are you working with, right? Oh, we're working with some partner. Okay, well, that partner is really good in other industries and not yours, right? And we know that because we've been around the block. You did the diligence, but maybe didn't go deep enough, whatever. So you just have to really be aware of who you're buying it from. That's all I'm saying. And if you just ask a few questions, you dig a little bit, look online. I'm not asking you to do a bunch of research in here. Just be aware and you'll be amazed at what you'll learn when you dig under the covers a little bit. That's it for that. We could do another whole session on that. If you're interested in another session on that, let me know. We'll put it together. Good. Let's move over now to, okay, now that we know who to buy from, kind of, how much is it going to cost? And these are really, 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 really rough numbers, but they're kind of good to use, right? And it goes, again, from that tier four upwards up to the top. Those are sort of orders of magnitude pricing. Of course, a tier two can go lower if you have fewer users. Like we say at the bottom there, that the software pricing is driven by It can be driven by modules industry packs, number of users, technology options, transaction volume, the day of the week that you buy it on. We'll talk about negotiation on price in a minute. But there's lots of drivers for different software costs. So, but when you look at sort of these tiers, these are approximate ranges of what you would we would expect to see based on those different tiers that we talked about. And this is important too, because these are annual costs, right? The world of the perpetual license where you pay a bunch up front and then you pay for just a teeny tiny bit of maintenance, 20, 30% per year are gone. Very, very rare to find those models, although there are some vendors that will do it when it makes sense. So good to know that. But these are about the annual cost that you're going to spend. And they look high, and how in the world can you ever justify that, et cetera, et cetera. Usually the easiest way to justify it is avoided future headcount. If we get an app in place and it actually does what we need it to do, not the crazy, you know, stuff that's like impossible, but like incremental improvement, do we have to hire two people to handle our AP process because we're just getting bigger and bigger, right? Hopefully the answer to that could be no, or let's hire those people and have them doing something better than just processing AP transactions. The system can help with that. So that is the biggest business benefit that we quantify on behalf of our clients whenever we do a business case is, again, the future avoided headcount. So, but with that said, you can see some of the pricing. We've gotten tier one deals where the software pricing was less. We bought less of the footprint of the software for sure. But, you know, these are just good ranges. Good. So we bought the software. Yay. Now what do we do? Oh my gosh, we actually have to pay somebody to implement it. I'm definitely a little more, not antagonistic, but a little more hostile today towards my industry. You'll have to apologize because we're right after this call, I get to get into some fun stuff with a project that didn't go very well. And part of it was because of this professional services costs incurred in implementing an ERP, right? So you can't just plan your total cost of ownership on what is the software cost. I think most people know that. You can't just plan it on what the software costs this year and next year and next year and next year, but you also have to look at how much this thing's going to cost to implement. So we call them implementation partners, right? The software vendor has professional services people that can do it. There's a certified partner that can do it, but there's other stuff that goes in too that you have to keep in mind. Data migration assistance, that can take a lot of time. There's integrations that need to be built. There's project management that needs to be in there. And there's some other costs too. You might want to bonus your people if they're working, you know, their day job, 40, 50 hours a week, plus working on the ERP. You might need to backfill some people too. So, you know, that's a good slide for kind of a total cost of ownership model that we build out that sort of says, okay, client, this is what the costs are really going to be. You sure you really want to do this? Yeah. Here's all the benefits, and the benefits are higher than the costs, but, you know, you really need to be aware of that. So next slide here, we've got our software, we've got our services identified, let's start negotiations. So here's the thing, that software negotiations are tricky. I know we've got some white papers on this. Get them if you're thinking about buying software, please. Don't go into it without knowing things. Oh, I've done it before. Yeah, but you didn't do four of them last week like we did. Seriously. Even this alone, right? You know, well, what do I sign? I just say, this is the software I want, right? Yeah, that's called an order form. And we actually came right out and said this. It will always contain something you don't need. That's so funny. Oh boy. That's how we save costs for our clients in the negotiations. We said, now, wait a minute. We're a professional services firm. Why do we need advanced planning and scheduling for, you know, for supply chain? Oh, we just put that on there. Okay. We'll just cross that out. Right. I mean, there's silly mistakes, but sometimes the people that put together the order form haven't been involved in the deal to know what's really in there. Right. So sometimes they do just make silly mistakes, and it's not even on purpose. It's just mistakes. But maybe we don't need platinum support. Maybe we would be fine with gold support. But you didn't even know to ask that question until you heard this CPE session. So you really have to look at each line on the software order form. And I would say that our CPA brethren, our clients we work with, they're usually very meticulous with this, and it pays to be. It just does. So, okay, good. You sign the software order form, you get it right, you're done. Well, but wait a minute. There was a link in that software order form that went to some other agreements that were, that sort of govern the software order form. So, but that's fine. I can sign those separately. If you look at the language, it says when you sign that order form, you're also agreeing to, like, one vendor that we're about to negotiate with. They have 8 other agreements that are on their website that by signing their order form, you're agreeing to those other, boilerplate terms and conditions. Don't worry about those. You can't change those. That's not true. The vendors don't want you to because, now we're going to have all these contracts and da-da-da. And there may be software companies on this line right now. And you know what it's like to have customers with different legal agreements. It's very difficult. But if you're the person buying the software, you might want higher limited liability protection, or you might need to remove the clause that says that you don't want to be included in their marketing material because of the privacy of your organization, whatever it is. There's a lot of stuff in there you really need to look at. So know those agreements are there. And if you just read the order form, there will be a line, I swear, that says this order, quote, whatever, is governed by these agreements. And you click it and you go out. Good. That's all. We're done, right? No. Remember, there's the implementation services. So there's a statement of work that goes with that. And you really have to look at, do the number of hours make sense there? And do the tasks that they're proposing that they're doing make sense? Well, I don't know even what all that stuff is. Okay, then why are you about to sign a multi-$100,000 contract? So know it. I don't know what else to say. This is what my wife would say to me when I'm about to do something at the house that I shouldn't do. It's like, you really should know what you're doing first, right? But also, something not listed on this document here is that there are agreements that govern the professional services, a master service agreement, professional service agreement, et cetera, et cetera. You want to review that. They may have something in there that they bill full time for their travel. It might not be in the SAL, but it's in that MSA. There could be hosting and other technology requirements or agreements that are being made too. And then a support contract as well, so for ongoing services. So lots of things there. I'm going to just cover these next couple of slides pretty quick because I definitely want to cover some of your questions here. So key levers to pull here on the next slide. It's really important that you understand you're not stuck with the deal that's in front of you. Yes, there's flexibility on discounts, the rate on the professional services. Please don't sign software contracts without having renewal caps. Payment terms can be flexible, and you really do need to understand the full service agreements for sure. You can pull those levers. That's the key thing here. And then the little bonus slide here on our next one about overlooked contract items. These 4 areas always get missed. So just know that when they put training, 2 hours, well, who's going to do the training then? You are, right? Data migration, who's doing what? Remember, you've got to clean the data. You have to extract the data. You have to transform the data. Then it has to be loaded. Oh, yeah, we do the loads, 2 loads. What if the load costs or takes 3 or 4 or 5 times? Yeah, we're just going to charge you for that. Fine. Customizations, you got to scope those separately. And you got to be like, don't do it unless you absolutely have to. And a key tip there is we tell the person who's saying, I got to have this. Okay, good. Are you willing to pay for it out of your own pocket? Whoa, hey, what do you mean? All right, well, just figuratively, is it that important to you? Yeah, it is. Okay, good. Then you go through and you scope it and you do that. Integrations are tricky. The migration, customizations, integrations, you know, think back to, I'm a child of the 80s, I guess, with Adam Sandler. But integrations are really something that's often overlooked where, okay, yeah, we just need to buy that bank connector. Okay, well, who's going to work with the bank to get everything set up so that you're connecting with their sandbox and testing it? Oh, the implementation partner will do that. No, they won't. There's 10 hours of integration support there. So those are things oftentimes that, again, can get overlooked. Whew, again, we could spend all day on those. But here you go. True or false, buying ERP software is complex, But with the right knowledge, you can get what you need at a great price. There you go. True or false? We try to be pretty positive with the way that we think about things. So it's a good question to put out there. Perfect. Good. We'll close that up. I think that'll be great. Of course, the answer on that one is true. So it's very easy to get a good deal. You just need to know, again, all the things that we've talked about. So to summarize here on our last slide, it's ERP systems can solve business automation and flow problems, right? So if you have those problems, ERP can do it. You have to understand what it can and cannot do before you purchase it for sure. Definitely look at the right tier of software for your company, even knowing that there's multiple tiers, I think is helpful. And engage an implementation partner to help during the software selection process. So they get to know you so that the pricing and the implementation statements of work and what they're telling you, they actually have some reality of who you are. They're not just, oh, here's a SOW we'll throw over the fence. No. Get to know us first, right? Estimate all the implementation costs before signing contracts and getting your boss to sign off on it. And then ask for a discount. Don't not ask for a discount. Absolutely. Even if it's 5%, that's 5% less than you would have paid before. But then remember those other levers in here too. And again, we can send you the deck for some more details. But call us anytime. We are definitely around. If you go just to this last slide here too, this is my email. It's my cell phone. Don't hesitate to reach out. Lucy, I should say Erica, is a little easier to reach sometimes. I'll usually bring her in for the conversation and she can get with you guys right away and pretty much help you get going in any direction. We want to see you be successful. At the end of the day, you can be successful with ERP once you really understand what it is. So with that, Rebecca, Nick, what questions do we have?
Hi, Sean. So we did have one question that came through, and it was, in your opinion, Sean, which tier does Sage X3 belong in?
Two. Yep. Two. For sure. It's Sage X3 is sort of was initially built for process kind of manufacturing kinds of environments. Great product, really. We implemented it with a greenhouse in Washington. They grow perennials. Different kinds of flowering products. And it was very well suited for that environment. It's not tiny by any means, and it's not the biggest, but it's a complex implementation for sure. But again, really well suited for process industries. Lots of other Sage tools too, but it's really, I think, the go forward manufacturing solution for sure. Although we just learned at the Sage Transform conference that there's some other stuff coming out there too, but that's where we put that.
All right. Wonderful, Sean. I think that's really the only question for everybody. There's something I'll show you later that we got a chat from, but I will take over from here. Thanks, Great. Sean.
You bet. Thank you.
Well, everyone, thank you so much for joining us today. And thank you, Sean, for sharing a lot of great information. I always learn something, and I've been around for a while now. If you have any questions about today's presentation, please do let us know, especially if you have a question that you weren't able to ask. You can email us, call us, Lucy. Her information is in the chat. Thank you to the person who asked that question. And like I said, Sean's information, we're always here to help. So also, if you would like a copy of the deck from today's presentation, please let us know. I know lots of you said so in the chat, but if you send an email to Chrissy, as well for your CPE credit, please let her know that you would like the deck and we can respond with everything. Again, if you need the credit for today's presentation and you answered each of the polling questions, please send an email to Chrissy at chrissykroger@erpadvisorsgroup.com. That email is in the chat. And be sure to join us for our next webinar, which is scheduled for next Thursday, March 21st. It is ERP Implementation Case Study Series, Mid-Sized Food and Beverage Companies, where Sean will review ERP case studies for mid-sized food and beverage companies and the common success factors for migrating to new food and beverage ERPs. This is the first installment of our new ERP Implementation Case Study Series. super excited about it. We'll be covering a lot of industries, so please be on the lookout for that. Many of them are already on the website for you to register. And if you don't see your specific industry, let us know, and we might end up doing an episode for you. But please go to our website, erpadvisorsgroup.com, for more details and to register. ERP Advisors Group is one of the country's top independent enterprise software advisory firms. ERP Advisors Group advises mid to large size businesses on selecting and implementing business applications from enterprise resource planning, customer relationship management, human capital management, business intelligence, and other enterprise applications, which equate to millions of dollars in software deals each year across many industries. Thank you again for joining us today.
Thank you.